All right. Brian, I'm glad to be here with you today. My name is Judy Williams. It is June 29th, 2019. We're in Shreveport, Louisiana. Will you introduce yourself?
Judy, I'm glad to be here with you today, too. I'm Brian Sullivan, and welcome to my home.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. I'm delighted to be interviewing you today. I found it really odd that one of the titles for this was for us to interview LGBTQ elders. And in no way do I consider you an elder.
Well, I was puzzled by that, but the criteria is to be born before 1969.
Right.
So I was born in 1967, so I'm 52. Wow. And, you know, elder is all just a matter of perspective.
It is. So. Well, I certainly consider myself an elder. We've been friends for a while, and I'm really honored to be able to interview, and I really appreciate your allowing me to do this.
Well, honored also to be here. I, you know, trust you completely, and I'm glad to be a part of the process.
Thank you. So I do have some questions I want to ask, but feel free to go off on a tangent or suggest things if you like, but I thought we would start by my just asking you to tell me a little bit about yourself. When you were born, where were you born?
I was born May the 31st, 1967 in Minden, Louisiana, here in Northwest Louisiana, and was raised most of my life in a really small town called Sibley, Louisiana in South Webster Parish. I like to describe Sibley as a place that doesn't actually have a four-way stop. It was a three-way stop. It was a highway where another highway dead-ended.
Wow. So,
looking back, I had a really idyllic childhood of running in the woods, and there was a group of boys that lived, we all lived not in a neighborhood, but this area of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say country, I mean country as in rural, not this part of the United States.
Right.
But we were, you know, I grew up country.
Mm-hmm.
And we swam in the creek and climbed in trees and jumped out of haylofts and had a really, really wonderful childhood. And to give you a better description of Sibley, there were 42 people in my high school graduating class. And most of those people I went to kindergarten with.
Wow.
So it was a small, rural southern town.
What did your parents do in Sibley?
My dad worked road construction his entire life from age 22 until a few years before he passed. And my mom did various things. At one point she worked in the cafeteria at the school, and then she worked at a fishing worm packaging company called Mr. Twister.
Yes,
do you remember,
I remember Mr. Twister?
It was out of Minden.
Wow, yeah.
And they would line up the worms on styrofoam sheets, kind of like the butcher would put pork chops in.
And let's clarify, these were plastic worms.
Plastic
right?
worms. They were fishing lures.
Right.
So they were very colorful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you have siblings?
I have two older brothers. Mm-hmm. And they are 2 years apart, and then I was 5 years below them. So they had, I was really definitely the younger child. Looking back, I realized as we were growing up, they were at an age where they competed for resources.
Mm-hmm.
But they were kind of out of the house by the time that I started driving and, you know,
right.
things like that. So I didn't have as much of a competition, you know,
mm-hmm.
with, I was just a the younger brother.
So 5 years is psychologically an only child. Did you feel like that in some ways?
Oh, I've never heard that, but I think that I really had a very different childhood experience than my brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way I could say that I seem to be more connected with my older brother than our middle brother.
Mm-hmm.
But makes me think so vividly about my childhood.
Right.
Like, it really was kind of like that. You know, I was not participating in the things that they were participating in,
right.
even though we were all in the house together.
As you were growing up, did you have a sense of being different in terms of your gender identity?
I will tell you that when we, on some bunk beds, we would play Star Trek because Star Trek was, we were the original Star Trek viewers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the oldest brother was, he was Captain Kirk, and my middle brother was probably Mr. Spock. and I wanted to be Captain Kirk's wife. And I just don't, I just, we were just kids playing, and mm-hmm. there was absolutely nothing sexual about it. It was just kind of this identity thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my first memory of anything like outside what's considered the air quote norm.
Right.
And in thinking about this interview, I think back to the seventh grade, in line in the cafeteria, designer jeans had become popular,
mm-hmm.
and there was a fellow eighth grader who, seventh or eighth grader, who she was curvaceous, and she had on a pair of Gilly jeans,
mm-hmm.
like Mickey Gilly, the country music star, he had some designer jeans. And our seventh grade teacher, he was a coach, and he looked at her backside and said, "I think we'll call you Gilly." And I was standing right there, we were in line, and I leaned over and looked at his backside and said, "What are we gonna call you?" And he drew back. And that was the moment that I realized I had crossed some kind of boundary. And I realized he was really flirting with her. Like, he was looking at the backside
right.
of a voluptuous, she was eighth grader, but,
right.
you know, and in doing the same gesture to him, it was clearly off limits. And I will tell you, I really think that is the moment that I went into the closet.
Wow.
That it, like, the separation from, air quote, the norm.
Right.
Began at that moment in the cafeteria line
wow.
in middle school.
Did you know that you were gay then? Or did you just feel like, how did that make you feel?
It just made me feel like a barrier needed to be put up. So did I know I was gay then? Yes. Did I have the framework to, even within my own mind, to grasp it and embrace it or handle it? I didn't really have the framework.
Right.
So I just knew that at that moment, separation occurred. Like, I really did feel suddenly removed from, I hate to say it again, air quote, the norm.
Right.
You know, it was a pivotal moment where I will say I went into the closet. And so it wasn't a scary moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a moment of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. So how did that affect you moving forward, do you feel?
I had a unique, in the fourth grade, my parents' marriage started getting really obviously shaky. And I started eating a lot. I think emotional eating.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I got to middle school, I was the fat kid in our class.
Mm-hmm.
And as we went into high school and dating really started happening, people started dating each other, you know, and some people that dated in high school, you know, went on to get married. So these were the beginnings of, you know, relationships
mm-hmm.
happening. I kind of, I won't say that I became obese to hide my sexuality,
mm-hmm.
but I do know, looking back, that it became easy to avoid the topic or the social situations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't dating anybody,
mm-hmm.
but I almost had my size and my weight as a reason. You know,
right.
you know, I wasn't confronted with
right.
it. You know, you think rural, small town, southern, but I mean, I was creative, I was artistic. Looking back, I won the boys' beauty contest in school. I did Boy George in a school lip sync contest, won second place. You know, I was not butch by any means, but I was smart and I was funny.
Right.
And I kind of had my weight to hide behind, mm-hmm. to protect me. I was never, you know, I'm sure there was talk. And even later on, as adults, you know, to meet people I went to school with, they'll share, oh, we thought you were gay. Mm-hmm. But I was never harassed. I was never confronted. I was never, you know, treated cruelly by my classmates for being gay.
That's so pretty remarkable. It really was. In a small town, especially.
I can hear a little bit more of the kind of idyllic.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all knew each other from kindergarten.
Right.
So, in a way, we were friends beyond our sexuality.
Right. It sounds like you were accepted as who you were.
I really think so. Yeah. I really do.
Were there other childhood influences, good or bad, that you remember?
Many, not necessarily related to sexuality, though.
Right. So, but that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I do remember. I will tell you, I remember a summer, was I 11 or 12, right there in the beginnings of puberty,
mm-hmm.
we spent the summer in St. Francisville, in southern Louisiana, the home of the Audubon Society,
right.
Beautiful southern
mm-hmm.
town, and my father's road construction job took us there, and he had a big project, so we moved there for the summer.
Right.
And we rented a little house, but we got access to the pool at the Holiday Inn. And because we were swimming every day, I had some goggles. And a gentleman showed up at the pool wearing a Speedo. And he was fit and sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
And he was wearing a Speedo, and I spent a lot of time with those goggles underwater checking out that Speedo. One, because it was so exotic, and
right.
two, because it was, you know,
yeah.
there's something, there aren't a lot of secrets with a Speedo.
Yeah,
like,
true.
The male, you know,
true.
The male parts are there.
Right.
And I even remember, like, one time, kind of casually just following this gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I definitely was interested
mm-hmm.
in the masculinity of this person
right.
and the revealed masculinity of this person.
Right.
So,
did he notice you were following him?
Who knows? I hope not.
He never acknowledged you.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like a creeper.
No.
But,
but you were a kid.
Yeah, I was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's a memory of, like, attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you've talked about growing up kind of an idyllic childhood in the country and
mm-hmm.
with friends who were consistent throughout your life. So you also mentioned your parents' marriage getting kind of shaky in the fourth grade. What was your family life like?
It was kind of, if you think about that, 1950s
mm-hmm.
dad works.
Right.
In our case, Dad worked every day, long hours, but sometimes he worked out of town
mm-hmm.
during the week, and he came home Friday, washed his clothes, left Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, got most of my parenting from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was kind of this, sometimes, you know, you just didn't want to make your dad angry.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't want to, you wanted to give him his space and let him watch TV and drink his beer. And so he wasn't play catch dad.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that he, like fishing and hunting,
mm-hmm.
Some of the things that he did engage in, like his hobbies, I wasn't that interested
mm-hmm.
in those things. And so I was copying clothes out of the Sunday paper, like
mm-hmm.
Dillard's advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
And so those kind of things that we probably could have better bonded over,
mm-hmm.
I just wasn't that into them.
Right.
So I went hunting a few times, went fishing a few times, and we, you know, it just kind of naturally just,
right.
you know,
so what was your relationship with them like later in life?
Very you know, my mom, I've always been close to my mom, and she was very religious. Mm-hmm. To describe it, it was a non-denominational church community that we went to, which meant that we would go to revivals at both the Assembly of God churches and the Pentecostal churches.
Wow.
We kind of rode this spot in between. So the women of
both are fundamentalists, right?
Very, yeah. Very. And but the women, we had a female minister, which was interesting. Mm. Very non-traditional, but still that speaking of tongues, prophecy, laying on hands, and people, you know, being slain in the spirit. Very fundamental, very high energy, religious.
Trauma.
And for me, it was looking back at when I finally realized what was going on, there were a lot of women in this church whose husbands didn't come to church.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this kind of a... there were a lot of them, and so their husbands drank, or their husbands ran around, or it was kind of it wasn't a feel-good church.
Right.
In a lot of ways. And then I later realized there was a lot of almost like Jobism, like the more you suffer, the greater your reward in heaven. The more you suffer on this earth.
Wow.
And there was almost like that was part of the suffering, where these women that believed so strongly, who were married to men who weren't participating
mm-hmm.
in their faith. And so, and but there were cracks, and mm-hmm. I've described myself at times as not coming from a folded napkin background,
right.
You know, like,
right.
And as I've grown up, I've gotten to situations where I just sit back and observe and learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's carried me a long way. But by sitting back and observing this, there were some cracks in the faith, and there were some cracks in the religion. There were some things that just didn't add up. And so I never really fully participated. I never really believed.
Mm-hmm.
And I went until mom stopped making me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my oldest brother fell out, and then my middle brother fell
right.
out. And finally I got to an age where I resisted it enough,
mm-hmm.
resisted enough that I didn't have to go
right.
to church anymore.
So did you feel in that church, well, go back and tell me about when you finally came out, because
so,
you may have already been out of that
you know,
church
I'm,
by then.
Oh, yeah. I went to Tech, and my freshman year at Louisiana Tech, I was over 300 pounds. I was really hiding behind this, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
just, my sexuality wasn't much of a concern to anybody.
Right.
And so, my freshman year, I lost a lot of weight, and...
What made you lose the weight?
Just, I actually had gastric stapling,
mm-hmm.
because I was 18, and I was over 300
right.
pounds, and it was a really unhealthy place.
Yeah.
And so... I lost weight pretty rapidly, and then I discovered exercise, and
mm-hmm.
so now I'm 52, I exercise a lot, and I'm trying to eat healthy, and have a completely different lifestyle,
right.
but I suddenly discovered that I was cute.
Which you hadn't known about yourself.
I'd never thought of myself
that
way. I'd never been the object of attention,
right.
you know,
right.
and so... and had unruly curly hair,
mm-hmm.
but a woman at a hair salon sold me a can of mousse and cut a weight line in the back of my hair, and changed my life.
Is
and
that
so,
where you started wanting to be a hairdresser?
No, I had I thought about doing hair after high school, but my principal got me a scholarship to Louisiana Tech, and I'm the first person in our family to go to college and flunk out. I'm really proud. I have a nephew who's gone to college and completed
it's
it.
That's wonderful, right?
But in college, I started going to a club called the Capri in downtown Shreveport.
Oh, I remember that, sure.
And actually, July the 4th, 1987, I went to my first gay bar. It was called
mm-hmm.
Bubba's. It was in Bossier.
Mm.
It is since closed, but I had a friend who we graduated together. He went to work in retail. He didn't go to school. He started dating a much older woman whose son was a drag queen.
Interesting.
And he went out to the gay bar with his girlfriend, mm-hmm. and saw the drag show. And I think he really, like, he was like telling me of this exotic place he'd been. And so I went with him. I went with my straight friend mm-hmm. to the gay bar. And he was really helping me mm-hmm. kind of come out.
Right.
And it was euphoric.
Wow.
Like, when I walked in there and the music was blaring and the lights were flashing and the people were beautiful and they were my people,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you, it was a special moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming up on July the 4th.
Yeah, no kidding. Independence Day in so many ways.
In so many ways for me.
Yeah.
And so it, I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then this friend, his name was Robert, he's the first person that I said the words, mm-hmm. like, I'm gay.
Is this your straight friend who was with you, or the
person? Straight friend.
Oh, interesting.
My straight friend.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then in 1989, so I dropped out of college, went to beauty school, barely made it through beauty school from laziness, and then decided I wasn't sure if I wanted to do hair, and a friend was escaping. She was dropping out of college and moved to the Grand Canyon. From May until December of 1989, it's the only time I've lived away from mm-hmm. Northwest Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And as often happens when you go to college or you move to a new city, you get to suddenly just be yourself
mm-hmm.
without any of the baggage that you carry around, or you have the opportunity to set the baggage down and recreate yourself.
Yeah.
And so I just started meeting people and identifying
mm-hmm.
as gay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing time of just getting to know myself and getting comfortable with
mm-hmm.
how I describe myself and kind of embracing that part and meeting wonderful people and it being okay.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there were lovers and there was,
mm-hmm.
there was heartbreak.
Yes.
And there was learning,
mm-hmm.
but I wrote my mom a letter from the Grand Canyon,
mm-hmm.
and I waited a week and I called her. Well, it's pretty remote, so she had just gotten the letter
right.
the day I called,
right.
and my mom said, well, I thought you might be,
mm-hmm.
and that is the moment I got angry, because I felt like my mom had a responsibility
mm-hmm.
to check on me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if she thought that was so, then she's my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of got angry with my mom for telling me I thought you were.
Mm-hmm.
And that anger, I love my mom dearly, but I had a big period of anger. And where my parents didn't have the birds and the bees talk with me.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't in any way try to prepare me for social, sexual relationships.
Right.
And it's because they knew I was gay and they didn't know what to do with it.
You think your dad knew as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone knows you're gay.
Mm-hmm.
You're the last person to realize that everyone knows you're gay.
Yeah.
Truly.
Right.
And unless you are just really good in your closet,
mm-hmm.
but I remember a moment in childhood. I was watching PBS. I was watching a ballet on Sunday, and I was in the living room in my underwear,
mm-hmm.
spinning around, dancing and mimicking, and
mm-hmm.
just swept up in the moment. I spun around, and there stood my parents, coming out of their bedroom, behind my dad's recliner, looking like the couple from American Gothic.
Right.
Just look of, like, we don't know who you are. You know, I remember that distinctly, kind of like, you know, they didn't know, seeing their son dancing ballet in the living room. It just didn't fit in the framework of their understanding.
So how did you feel when you saw that look?
You know, it's just one of those cracks. Right. Like, just, you know, just felt, I don't even remember how old I was for that, but it definitely just didn't quite feel like a belonging sibling.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of those moments that right. was like, I don't know where I belonged. I just don't think.
Maybe not here.
Maybe not here.
So how long were you angry at your parents?
So I didn't have much of a relationship with my dad, mm-hmm. like pretty distant, right. and then when my parents split. But I had a lot of some anger at my mom and at her faith and her religion. And but I came out, and my mom really was always there for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't, it wasn't one of those, you hear the horror stories of people who are rejected, young people
yes.
who are rejected
yes.
by their religious parents
right.
or whatever, social,
right.
religious, whatever reasons. My mom never rejected me in that way. In fact, years later, when I was the queen of Apollo,
mm-hmm.
Shreveport, it was an all-male gay Mardi Gras
right.
crew here that they had a, the queen was a man. You know, my mom was right there at my table, tears in her eyes,
That's
cheering for
wonderful.
Me as,
right.
as I went around. And so she, her faith never wavered,
mm-hmm.
but she loved her child.
Right.
And that, you know, that meant so, so much.
So how were you able to forgive her?
Have I? No.
that's the question. Have you?
You know, I just think it's just acceptance. Like, she learned to accept me for me,
mm-hmm.
and I learned to accept her for her. And we weren't going to change each other.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to change. And I do think that her, just like we all have moments, I think that her faith softened.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she realized, you know, when you watch the minister that you're giving money to, using it to buy prostitutes, you know, when mom was a
wow.
Jimmy Swaggart, you know.
Yes.
She was a...
Right.
you know, a supporter
mm-hmm.
of that hellfire and brimstone.
Right.
And so moments like that, I don't think weakened her faith.
Mm-hmm.
I think it changed her faith.
Right.
And so I think mom and I just learned to accept each other. We always loved each other.
Right.
And so that,
yeah.
that we just learned to accept each other.
Is there anything that you wish you had said to her?
You know, it turned out okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what, you know, I was ready to tell her when I was ready.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what I would change about it. No, I would have, you know, I would have, I said that to her.
Right.
Why didn't anybody ever talk to me about sex or
right.
life and relationships? But
what was her
but
answer?
They weren't doing too great
right.
with their own.
Right.
So.
What was her answer to that?
It was more of a, I don't know. It was stated more like, I wish someone had.
Mm-hmm.
Not why didn't you, but
right.
you know, I wish someone had.
And how did she respond to that?
She was a quiet woman.
Yeah. Didn't have much to say. Is there anything you would have looked back on and said to your teenage self? Any advice you would give your teenage self?
I made a terrible mistake when I came out. In that I rejected all of my straight friends
mm-hmm.
for fear of rejection.
Oh, wow.
I didn't go to a wedding of a friend, Tater and Lynette.
Mm-hmm.
And and I kind of cut myself off. All those guys that I grew up with swimming in the creek mm-hmm. and swinging on the vines and my high school friends that we were so close because mm-hmm. we'd known each other our whole lives.
Right.
And when I kind of, you know, accepted that I was gay and started making gay friends, fear of rejection caused me to do what I was afraid of and rejected those people.
Right.
I didn't give them the chance
mm-hmm.
to accept me
mm-hmm.
for who I really was.
Right.
And that was a mistake. And and I feel that, I don't know, I might have been rejected by all of my old friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I made the mistake of rejecting them all.
Did
I have
you ever...
one good friend left from uh-huh. high school. And I have acquaintances and I see people and I have
right.
rekindled
That's
relationships.
What I was gonna ask. Right.
And you know, in Facebook, the great, you know, I wonder what happened to so and so. Well,
right.
you find out and you have a few conversations
right.
and it picks up or it doesn't.
Yeah.
But that was a mistake to cut myself off. And I think it hurt. I think it hurt people. I think it confused people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
How did you hear about it hurting people? What made you finally decide it was a mistake?
Just a moment of clarity. When I realized that my fear of rejection. I rejected people because of my fear of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a moment of clarity that happened sometime later
mm-hmm.
down the road. So, you know, was I equipped to go to my friends and have the conversation?
Right.
I guess I wasn't.
Right.
Because if I had been, I would have.
Right.
But I did them and myself a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
From just cutting myself off
mm-hmm.
from people who I cared about and they cared about me,
right.
but I just, you know, there was some shame
mm-hmm.
and there was shame and fear
yeah.
wrapped up in it.
Yeah.
Shame for being gay
mm-hmm.
and fear of being rejected because of it.
I have a friend who's a counselor who says sometimes we create our own worst nightmares unwittingly and in a different way,
mm-hmm.
but it sounds like that's kind of what you did.
Mm-hmm.
You set yourself up to be rejected by rejecting them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's a great moment of clarity
mm-hmm.
you had later. So tell me about your first love.
My goodness. You know, what I thought was love.
Well, that'll start. That's a good
or
start.
Or love as best I could express it
yeah.
at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I loved that straight guy who was dating a woman 30 years older with a drag queen son.
Right.
I loved him.
Yeah. Did he know it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, unrequited love is no fun.
No.
So I moved on from that.
Right. That was wise.
That was wise.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. It was infatuation
mm-hmm.
and mystery. I saw someone at a dance performance at Centenary College
mm-hmm.
who was a dancer and just graceful
mm-hmm.
and physically graceful and physically fit and very sweet. And so it was a brief kind of flaming
mm-hmm.
Relationship instead of a low smoldering one.
Right.
But that's the first time I cried
mm-hmm.
at the ending
mm-hmm.
of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It was brief and that person was here and then moving.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first kind of love loss.
Right.
Experience.
Right. Have you had a lot of relationships before you and James found each other?
At age 38,
mm-hmm.
I started my first long-term relationship.
Oh.
I had the longest relationship before that had been 6 months, but it was 2 3-month periods with the same person. An attempt at a redo.
Right.
And I, after college and beauty school and Grand Canyon, I moved back to Louisiana, moved back to Minden, started doing hair. And after a year of doing hair in Minden, I became an educator for a company, a product company. Mm. And I started teaching on weekends, and I started traveling and teaching, and I became very busy. And I married my career.
Mm-hmm.
And I was seeing people in Austin, Texas. I was there so often, mm-hmm. but still living in Shreveport. And so there just wasn't a lot of time for relationships.
Right.
And so I had loves.
Yeah.
And I had fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm 52 now. My first long-term relationship was at age 38.
Wow.
But I stopped after 14 years of traveling and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped teaching and just went to work in the salon.
Mm-hmm.
And a month later, I met James.
Wow. How did you tell me about meeting him?
I met James at our local gay disco,
right.
called Central Station.
Yeah.
And I hope that gay bars never go away. They still are a good place to meet
right.
gay people. But I'd never met him before. Part of living in Shreveport, I was friends with a wonderful group of friends. But there was not a big dating pool because
mm-hmm.
I'd lived here so long,
yeah.
and I'm friends with the people that I have a lot of common with,
right.
and I met James. He had an interesting shirt, and I kind of casually ran my finger down his shirt and complimented it,
mm-hmm.
and he leaned over and kissed me. We were standing in a group
wow.
of people
yeah.
in the middle of Central Station, and so we made out for a little bit
right.
against the telephone by the wall. And then we exchanged numbers.
Right.
And a week later, we went to lunch on a Sunday, and we've been seeing each other ever since.
Wow. And how long has that been?
15 years. Coming up on 15 years.
That's an amazing commitment. What do you think the secret is?
I think that something that was really great with James and me is that he had moved back. He left Shreveport, moved
mm-hmm.
to Denton, Texas, and then Austin, and he lives 14 years in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But I was an out gay man,
mm-hmm.
and that was something about living in Shreveport. Like, I did not want to date guys in the closet. Just, it's boring.
Right.
There's usually a lot of too many issues that go along with that.
Right.
And so that kind of shrunk the dating pool also.
Right.
And I self-describe as atheistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I love that.
So that also, like, I just didn't want the hang-ups of dating somebody who was not comfortable
right.
with being an out gay man.
Right.
And I think that we were both very comfortable
mm-hmm.
with our sexuality,
right.
and I found it here in Shreveport, and he found it in his life journey,
mm-hmm.
and so we didn't have to meet in secret
mm-hmm.
or pretend
mm-hmm.
or have restrictions on how we proceeded,
right.
so it was really, really nice.
So what do you think is the secret to staying together and staying happy? That's
the true secret is choosing to be right or choosing to be happy. And it sounds so cliche, but it is so true.
Mm-hmm.
Those moments that it really is the choice of having a fight and not.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean living a lie, but I had a life coach at one time, and she had a wonderful concept of nobody, doesn't have to be anyone's fault, and no one has to be to blame.
Mm-hmm.
If you can approach a situation like that
mm-hmm.
And so, do I hold true to it every time? No.
Nobody could.
But those moments where you do get to make a decision about how you handle that situation.
Right.
And so choosing, finding a way to make it okay.
Mm-hmm.
Still being true to yourself.
Right.
But so you can choose to be right.
Right.
Or you can choose to be happy.
So do you feel happy in your life?
I do feel very happy.
Yeah.
Something that also has really helped our relationships, our relationship, is that we are both workers.
Mm-hmm.
We don't resent. You know, I own a salon company.
Right.
James has just started his own interior design business.
Right.
We're both creative. We have very similar aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
We get each other's jokes. You know,
right.
Those are all things that have helped.
Right.
But we're not jealous people. So
I'm just looking at time because I realize how many questions I have left to ask, and I haven't. I guess in these last few minutes, I really want to ask what you would like to say that I haven't asked you, because I'm not going to get to ask you everything I wanted to.
You know, again, in thinking about this, and I mentioned it earlier, it was such a revolutionary time in the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
When Boy George became a mainstream entertainer,
mm-hmm.
wearing makeup, so clearly flamboyant, and you know, I want to say thank you, Boy George, because you reached all the way into rural Northwest Louisiana, and you made it okay. Like, we were all singing Karma Chameleon, and we were all intrigued, and we knew that, again, he fit outside the norm, and for us, he was my first real, like, he was the first celebrity, or really the first person that I saw and thought, he's gay and he's okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just okay, he's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wealthy.
Right.
And he's successful. And so it was a pivotal moment having a mainstream celebrity to identify with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I worked with the local gay and lesbian film festival and
mm-hmm.
been part of PACE and
mm-hmm.
and local pride activities. But, you know, I see the importance of it helps everyone from whatever, if you feel isolated in any way, to see, read a book or see a movie or hear a story
mm-hmm.
or meet someone that you can identify with. It really helps. And Boy George really helped me. He helped me feel okay. And I'm, you know, thank you, Boy George.
Well, you in many ways have been that leading light in this community, Brian, because you've been, you know, a role model, I think, for a lot of younger people who look at you and see what they could be as well. So thank you for that. And I really thank you for giving me the opportunity to interview you. It means a lot.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Judy. It's my pleasure.
Wow. We did great.
Well, it just flies by. What were some of the questions you had?
I'm trying to figure out how